gonna ever back down from nobody. I don't care who it is. This is a brotherhood. And if we stand strong together, we can't be denied. If one of us goes down, we have another, and another, and another that's ready to fight. So let's hit this field and bang them. Bang them. Bang them. Somebody light me up.
It's time to huddle up. It's the Turf District Podcast. Welcome back to the Turf District, where we huddle up to talk all things Edmonton Elks and the CFL, and we are a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us, whether you're joining us on a download or a live feed or possibly even on Edmonton Sports Talk Radio. Thank you for joining and being a part of the show. We're excited to have you here and excited to have the guest that we have this evening. First, let's bring in the one and only Soup. Fan Mike, there he is. Ooh, new helmets, new footballs.
Well, not so new, but yeah, just a little new of a layout here. So
I like the new layout.
Yeah, it's looking a little better. It's a little different in here. Got rid of the couch, doing a bit of reorganizing, and hopefully soon we'll have everything in the one corner. It's just off camera here.
All everything cleaned up in great space.
As it should be, right?
As it should be, yes. Yep. As we get the... Now, I believe you had a special day last week. A very happy birthday to you, Superfan.
Thank you. Yes.
And glad we got to hang out a bit and chat.
Yeah, had some beverages and a little adult night out. And,
Yeah,
wow. No little ones. It was kind of fun.
It was kind of weird. Yeah, exactly. Now, if you are watching on any of the live streams, make sure you put your questions into the chat. That way, then we will be able to see them and get them, deal with them ourselves, probably in overtime. Or if you have a question for our guest, then please do that. Looks like we're kind of stuck here with Demon. I know he's around, but his device was not connected properly, so we're going to give him a second to see if that will reset, and then we'll be able to bring him back in. In the meantime, Superfan, while we wait for that, Elks made a couple of signings today.
Let's quickly
talk about those. Wide receiver Arkell Smith, wide receiver Herjee Mayala, which I thought that was pretty good backup.
Pretty solid pickup.
Offensive lineman Shane Richards and offensive lineman Hunter Stewart. So
three first rounders.
And ones that we were talking about getting some competitiveness on the offensive line. So
absolutely.
Those are guys that can challenge, and that's great to see. I was very excited about that. So, all right, we're going to just check really quickly here and see what's going on. Actually, while we do have a second, and we were talking to Cliff and Tim, somebody just beat me to the punch in the chat there. Their latest episode with Jason Moss was outstanding. I highly, highly recommend it. Jason is a passionate guy and was an excellent, excellent part interview. He was very open, and him describing the entire logo that they had last year that he created was just amazing. So I highly recommend checking that one out. So first question we have, do you see that one there, Superfan? Any change in the tailgate situation? Not as of yet. But there may be something going on. We'll see.
There may be things in the works. We will see.
Correct. And we are also, we've got our spots for sure. So we know that the spots that we were assigned, we will be in those for sure. And then we will wait and see if there is any maybe moving around. Let's see how it goes. there's things that could happen. Right, Superfan?
Plans are afoot.
Plans are afoot. Without further ado, our guest this evening, CFL legend, playing 23 years in the league, won 4 Grey Cups, 2 in green and gold, where he was named MOP in both, or MVP of the game, both of the Edmonton Elks wins, Eskimos wins at that point. He is second overall in CFL history for passing yards, and 3rd overall in CFL history for rushing yards. We would really, really love to welcome to the Turf District, I'm finally excited to say this, Canadian Football Hall of Famer, Damon Allen. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. It says I'm in your background. Am I in front? Am I live?
You're up live now. Yes, that's
right.
You're
good to go.
We've got you live. Yeah. I know it's a little bit jumpy, but we've got you there. Love the picture in the background. Well done. after I posted that, you let me know that was your very first start.
Yes, that was my 1985, my rookie year. And my first start was against Joe Barnes. At this time, he's a 13-year veteran playing for Montreal. And they came into Commonwealth Stadium in first place in the East. And that was my 38-1.
That was your very first start. That's wow,
very cool. It reminds me a lot. In 2002, you were with the Lions, and you played against Ricky Ray in his first start. So, sort of came full circle.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think he's as excited about that one, but still, it was good. You know, Damon, you accomplished so much in your career that I was even talking about in the introduction. How does it feel when you get an introduction like that with all those incredible stats and records that you're able to set up here?
Well, I think most important, I'm thankful of, you look back, and to be able to break records, I mean, a lot of good things have to occur during your whole career. You know, number one, your health, yeah. Playing with great teammates. And, you know, I was fortunate enough coming in my first year, I went to a team that, you know, their starting quarterback already, it was Matt Dunnigan, and he was already an all-star. And so, you know, at this time, you know, I had to learn as much as I can. And people don't realize, too, as, you know, back then we had 4 preseason games. Mm-hmm. And I played the first preseason game, a half of football, and then the next 3 season games after that, I was in street clothes. I didn't play at all. There's one game at home. I stayed in the stands. And I remember telling my parents, I said, I'm not sure if I made the team. But but they had already made that decision that I was going to be the backup quarterback after the first half of football, the first game of the preseason. And then it was Brad Taylor and the quarterback prior to that. They were fighting for the 3rd spot.
Yeah, James Woody.
Say that again?
James Woody was the other guy that was in camp.
Yeah, and so like I said, at this time, you know, I knew they gave me a pretty huge signing bonus to come there. I figured if you wanted to see if I can play, I would play all 4 preseason games. But, you know, they made their decision after a half of football. So I think that was the foundation for me. Right. And that pretty much started my whole career. And I probably did majority of my learning because I was on a veteran team back then to prepare me to go on and play, you know, 23 seasons after that. But that foundation in Edmonton taught me everything that I really need to know.
Yeah, that's amazing. So we always love when we have a guest coming on to sort of go back to the beginning. Obviously, you've got football in your family, but who introduced you to the game, and when did you start playing?
Well, I think what introduced us to the game was we watched television. We watched sports on TV. It's very interesting. I watched a lot of golf growing up as a kid, watching Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus on TV. But we didn't go into golf. But we were watching the NFL, and my brother Marcus always has this saying, you know, we watched television or a game on Sunday with our dad and my brothers. And he said he would say he knew exactly what side of the TV he wanted to be on. He'd rather be playing than watching.
Right.
And I think, you know, I take on those sentiments as well. I mean, that's why we would watch a football game on TV, and then we would go outside and gather the kids around the neighborhoods, and we would play football. And so we always mimic what we've seen on TV, because I think deep down that those are the things we wanted to do as well. And we did the same thing with baseball. You know, we would watch the All-Star game, and we would put on our, you know, Little League uniforms. We would go through introductions. We would go through the national anthem. But at this time, we're not playing full-on baseball, but we're playing aluminum can baseball, because in our backyard, we have floodlights, so we can play sports like all day long in our backyard. And so we would jump from one sport to another. But, you know, I think that was the passion that we had about sports and the desire to want to be really good if we had the opportunity to play.
Oh man, that's wild. Now, did you ever hope at one point that, you know, you would be the quarterback and Marcus would be the running back and you'd get to play together? Or did you get to play together as kids, or did you ever wish you could do that professionally?
Well, I think there was a chance because at this time my brother was already in the National Football League and I was finishing my college year. And I know I was the property of the LA Express during the USFL. But I went to the combine, and I remember seeing all the scouts because I ran a fast 40. My arm strength was at the, you know, a high six at the time. I think it was a rating of high, so I can make all the throws. And I remember having a conversation with Al Davis at the combine. And at this time, he was already saying that, you know, he don't know if he can handle two Allens on the same team. But, but yeah, I think that was the chance. But even during that time, a lot of NFL teams were talking about changing my position and wanting to know if I can play receiver or DB and those things. And I think that's what steered me to the Canadian Football League, because I was also a Warren Moon fan and I watched him play in the Rose Bowl. And I knew that he didn't go in the National Football League, but he was playing in Canada. And so that piqued my curiosity into, okay, he's up there in Canada. So it opened my eyes to there's another league to play in. And so now I didn't know that, you know, my junior or sophomore year in Fullerton, that, you know, that I was already the property of the Edmonton Eskimos.
Okay.
And so my head coach, Gene Murphy, wouldn't tell me until my senior year that there was a scout that came to our practices all the time. And at that time, it was Ray Newman.
Wow.
And Ray Newman was was scouting me and coming to practice. But I didn't know. Like I said, I was seeing my junior year. You know, I don't know if I was really looking for anyone to be scouting in my sophomore year, but my junior year, I would see him. And then it was until my senior year, Gene Murphy told me that, hey, that gentleman used to come and see you practice all the time. He's with the Edmonton Eskimos. And that peaked. And that, you know, put two to two together, because I knew Warren Moon played for the Eskimos.
Oh, that's amazing. Now, did you know anything about the Canadian game other than the fact that Warren played here before you did?
No, I did, because during that time, I think in 1982, they had NFL strike.
Right.
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 And then they start showing a lot of CFL games.
Hmm.
And so that's what caught my eye, and that's what caught my attention, that Warren Moon is in Canada playing for the Eskimos.
That's amazing. So thank you, NFL Strike, for giving us Damon Allen.
Learn about the Canadian Football League and those things. And then down, you know, like I said, a couple of years into my college career, then I started to realize that, you know, Canada is an option for me, because then you start to see a lot of the you know, melanated quarterbacks or black quarterbacks going in the Canadian Football League. So, you know, I followed J.C. Watts. I followed Conrich Holloway. You know, during this time, you're watching college football and guys that played my position, people of color, are playing these positions. And so by the time I got to the CFL, I mean, then I was like, you know, at all seeing Conrich Holloway, J.C. Watts, and
Roy,
you know, and these guys, Warren Moon had left at this time, but, you know, I definitely knew about Conrich Holloway and J.C. Watts. And there was a couple other quarterbacks, I mean, that you learned about. I mean, Turner Gill, I think he was here.
Yeah.
Because I came in 85, and I think he left in 84. He's a year older. So, you know, it really did, you know, open my eyes about, you know, something I wanted to do was play quarterback. And, you know, I guess you can say the rest is history after that.
For sure. I mean, Edmondson at that time was kind of famous for having such a long line of great quarterbacks. So when in your first year, was there any pressure coming into that, or was that just something that, I mean, did you even know who they were at that time?
I wasn't sure if I felt any pressure. I just knew that when I got there, and if people would notice early in my career on the sidelines, I would always have a football in my hand. I'd always be tossing it on the sidelines. You know, and I think, you know, early on, I learned about, you know, how to be a real good teammate. Because at this time, like I said, it was 85. I think Matt Dunnigan was already an all-star.
Right.
I was the backup quarterback. And then I learned to be a really good teammate. But I also learned how to compete and prepare myself if my name would be called. And so, you know, sometimes during practice, sometimes I used to throw for the scout team and, you know, and sometimes the backup quarterback, when you're throwing for the scout team, they always tell you, hey, this is where we want you to throw. And then when you throw it there, there's like three defenders there, you know, you're trying to get the football. So you end up throwing a lot of interceptions. But, you know, and I wouldn't do that, because when I came out of college, I just broke the NCAA record, a 26-year-old record of throwing the least interceptions with the most attempts. Over 300 and something attempts, I only threw three interceptions that year.
That's
and amazing. So, you know, I took pride in not giving the football up and not throwing picks, especially in practice, because, you know, the things that you would hear, if you throw a lot of interceptions, they will start calling you Santa Claus. You know, you're giving out gifts. And that was something I was not going to be a part of. And so they pretty much kicked me off of the going against the scout team, because I wouldn't throw to where they want me to throw. And I would, like, you know, work on making good decisions, throwing the football, throwing to the open guy, and those things. And so my mindset was always, you know, preparing myself. And if I wasn't playing in the games, then my practice was my game days.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, you're here in 85. In 87, you guys go all the way and you win your first Grey Cup, getting named the most outstanding player in that game as well. Tell us what you remember about that team and that final Grey Cup and that first win.
Well, there was a lot going on during that time, because you have to understand, it was my first year in 85. In 86, we went to the Grey Cup. We were 14 points yep. favorite, and we lost Hamilton.
Yep.
And I always think, like, what made it easier for 87 for me to play was also the start of, because I remember we were losing 28-0 at halftime, and I remember we going into the locker room and we're like, rah, rah, rah. Hey, just like the defense, we're going to shut them out and then we're going to put up 29 points or something like that. We were talking about in the locker room. And we kicked the ball off in the third quarter, and they went right back down the field and scored again and made it 36-0, right? And then I think after that, they had scored after the opening third quarter. And then it wasn't until the fourth quarter they let me play. And then I came in the game, and I put up 15 points. And so I think that kind of helped me out for the following year.
Mm-hmm. Right.
To prepare me, and, you know, not saying that, you know, we were going to do, or Matt was going to get hurt. I mean, no, we didn't have that idea, but I think it helped my calls because when I came in the game, even though it was 36-0 in the Grey Cup game and the stadium sold out, you know, I came in and moved the ball, put points on the board, and I think that's what opened the door, along with, you know, going into the season, Matt dealt with some injuries and concussions. And then I think I ended up starting 8 games that year.
Right.
And I think we went 7-1 during that time. And then when the playoffs started, Matt came back in to, you know, start the playoffs. And we won both our playoff games. And then I didn't play again until Grey Cup, when he was injured in the Grey Cup game. But one of those games that we played in the 8 games that I started was against Toronto.
Yeah.
And we beat them in Commonwealth Stadium. And so when we went down 14 points in the second quarter, you know, they were able to, okay, let's make this change now instead of waiting, you know, longer. But Matt dealt with concussion that game, and that gave me the opportunity to step in and not look back.
So true.
So after the 88 season, you left to join the Ottawa Rough Rider, and that's, I think, where everyone sort of saw you as that real dual threat quarterback, especially in 91. You threw for 4,200 yards and ran for over 1,000 in the same season. Was that something you had kind of known you would always be able to exploit in the Canadian game, or is that something that sort of developed over those years?
Well, I wouldn't have never went to Ottawa if after the 87 Grey Cup game we won, they fired the whole coaching staff.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Steve Goldman, who was our offensive coordinator, he helped. He taught me and Matt and Tracy very well about the game, the CFL game, and how it's played and those things. And so, you know, what we're taught. And so I always give Steve credit for teaching me the right way, because I was able to go from team to team and still have a really good feel about the game and what to do and those things. So, yeah, that was the start of it. And so, like I said, I wouldn't have never been in Ottawa if the coaching staff would have never been fired after we won the Grey Cup. And that's
right.
That's kind of rare to see in the CFL, but you're never surprised for some of the things that happened in the CFL when you win a Grey Cup and, like you're saying, the whole coaching staff get fired after you win a Grey Cup. And that's, you know, when he took the job in Ottawa, I mean, right away, when I became a free agent, man, he pursued me.
Yeah,
he knew what he had.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you make your triumphant return to Edmonton in 1993. I wouldn't say this the smoothest of years. I was just actually rewatching a bunch of those 93 games, and at the beginning of the season, the media and fans were not always kind to you. I have to be and you were kind of switching between you and Ricky Foggy, and then you kind of hit your stride in August. So tell us what you remember about coming back and kind of how that all kind of started in the beginning of that season with that team.
When I left Ottawa and came to Hamilton that year, the year before, they were 3-15. So they signed me. We ended up going to the Eastern Final, but we were 11-7 that year. And so at this time, I mean, you know, sometimes when you're dealing in the CFL, you know, they may assume that you're making too much money. And so they would trade you because they believe you're making too much money to pay. So Edmonton came back in the fold. And so my trade is always synonymous with Michael's couple of draft picks, because I'm the one who was supposed to okay the trade for me to go back to Edmonton. And I did. But the master plan with the whole thing was I was also playing baseball for the Hamilton Tiger Cardinals in Hamilton. And so I okayed the trade. We drove all the way down to Pittsburgh Pirates, and I threw for them. They signed me that day. And then I went on to Edmonton and played. What people don't realize is, you know, I think the trade before that was the Tracy Ham trade, the 16-player trade.
Yes. Yeah.
And then I came a week or two later.
Right.
And then when I got there, I mean, we were switching back and forth. I mean, that's hard to do sometimes, you know. Yes. You play a quarter, you play a quarter, I play a quarter. I mean, you can never get your rhythm. But, I mean, me and Rick offense better because he was with Adam Rita. Mm-hmm. And they ran a lot of the things they were running when they were in Toronto. And so, you know, it's – but I'd always told him, I said, you know, I'm a type of player that, man, when I start the game, I get stronger as the game goes. And so it wasn't until they realized that let's do it that way. And then, you know, we took off.
Sure did.
Yeah, I know I didn't come back to Edmonton to be going back and forth. So
no.
Besides, you know, you got to go through those things, and I think mentally it toughens you up. I learned a lot during that season. And I'm, you know, like I said, at the end of the day, you know, I'm much stronger mentally, physically to handle any kind of situation that I may face, because you have to understand I know history. I know the things that quarterbacks of color go through. And at the end of the day, you know, you weren't going to deny me because, you know, I will find a way to get myself in that position to play and try to win a championship. I mean, for me, whatever team I went to, my goal was to win a championship. But, you know, I was close to accomplishing that, whatever team I played on. But I definitely knew that I would give a team a chance, an opportunity to win a championship.
Absolutely.
That's so awesome. That's the unique thing that went on in 93, along with all that. And then, like I said, we got on a roll. You know, we got on that 8-9 game roll winning streak. And then, shoot, it wasn't a lot of teams that really wanted to play us, even though, you know, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, boy, they were putting they had a belt to us, man. They put up 110 points in two games we played them. So even to this day, they still talk about it. Matt would have played in that game, you know, we would have beat you guys in the Grey Cup. I said, yeah.
Yeah, what a coulda shoulda.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
If my aunt had balls, she would be my uncle.
That should have been on the ring. I mean, you talked about Adam Rita, and of course, when you talk Adam Rita and the 93 Grey Cup, the most famous play is going to be the Sally Rand. We've had a chance to speak to Adam, and he said there's just nobody out there that could run that play better. So what do you remember about when that first got introduced to you, and what was your favorite part of it?
Well, Adam is one of the coaches that allows creativity to empower you as an individual player.
Right.
But Adam does have the ability to motivate you too and say certain things to, you know, to get you in the right frame of mind. Adam was perfect for me at that time because when I first came to Edmonton, the quarterbacks called their plays. And so when you're thinking about the last 10 to 15 years, I'm not sure there's a quarterback in our league that has called three Grey Cup games and won them. And so I was taught to call your own plays, even though it's in the system, it's in the framework of the offense and what we're going to do on first, second, and medium, and what we're going to do on second and long. Those plays may be different than the plays I had with Dunnigan would have or Tracy would have. But we were taught to manage and learn to call the game. And so I think when I came with Adam, you know, he wanted that same kind of scenario, right? You know, we have a game plan. You pick the plays that you like, that you're comfortable with, and all those different things. And that's how he taught, too. So the comfortability for me, it just really had to learn his system and how he called things and learn his way of coaching. And that's partly why, you know, we were switching off back and forth because, you know, originally Ricky was part of that trade. And if you can remember when Ricky was in Toronto, there was a stretch of 6 to 7 games, man, that he was like unbelievable.
Right.
You know, they were putting up a lot of no huddle, and they put up a lot of points during that time. And so, you know, I knew they wanted to give Ricky an opportunity to showcase his skills along with when they got me there. You know, they probably felt that, you know, Dame is not going to rock the boat. But, you know, it got to a point where it's like, hey, you know, one of us has to start. And I think it wouldn't have done both of us any good if we'd have continued that the whole year. So one had to start. And so, you know, I'm thankful enough that, you know, they chose me and eventually we won the Grey Cup.
Amazing. Now, as watching these games, some of the names on this team, you know, yourself, of course, but Michael Soles, and of course, then coming over from Saskatchewan was Lucius Floyd.
No, yeah, he was a late pickup. Yeah,
Lucius, yep.
Was a late pickup.
Yep. And takes off running, and Jim Sandusky, and then, of course, one of your favorite targets besides Sandusky, but one Gizmo Williams. Now, everyone has a fun Gizmo story, so what's your Gizmo story?
You know, it's interesting that when that team that we looked at there in 93, I mean, it might have been Giz, first year starting receiver,
I believe.
Or he might have started before that, but I'm really sure that, I mean, Giz might have been his real full-time, you know, doing both. Yeah. I know he dabbled with it early before with Tracy Ham, but really he was the starting next receiver along with punt returning. And then we had downtown Eddie Brown, and then we had Sandman that we always drew plays and basically in the dirt because, you know, we had that kind of ability to make adjustments because, you know, I was calling the plays. And we can, like, look at and have these kind of – And so I kind of find us, I kind of call that group the Misfits because we started the season off with DK Smith and all these guys. And then our slot backs was JP Esquerdo. I mean, we had some Misfits, right? And we were able to, when we picked up Lucius, it really changed our game a little bit because we became a more, you know, that's when the knowing of the Sally Rand and the style of offense that, which I think sometimes people believe that I always needed a running game to win games. And I never did believe in that philosophy because, you know, if I throw the ball 40 times, I felt that I can put up numbers too, just like anybody else. But when you're getting 20-something attempts, it's hard to, like, you try to distinguish yourself as a passer and all those things because you're not getting the attempts to be able to compete with the guys who are getting 40 and 45 chances to throw. And so when we had Lucius Smith, but that's all Lucius Floyd, then that's when the Sally Rand came about in 93.
Mm-hmm.
Because teams had a difficult time trying to handle the Sally Rand and the naked bootleg, which we didn't do it from the shotgun. We did it from underneath the center.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It was until later in my career I started doing more shotgun, but majority of my career I was always underneath the center. So, you know, that just shows my ability to adapt from being underneath the center to in shotgun and continue to expand my game. And so, but I that team in 93, it's the Misfits, man. And like I said, we had a good defense. Our team was probably known for our defense, but we had the ability to put up and keep the ball and put up good numbers due to the fact because our defense was giving the ball back. And then they had a difficult time controlling our running game, pass game, boots, neckets. And I think even that year, I think I led the Western Division Conference in rushing.
Right.
Yep, sure did. 900, as I recall. It's crazy.
So, and then playoffs, of course, in that year as well, you beat Saskatchewan 51-13 quite handily. And then beating Doug Flutie and the Stamps in the final and to go to the Grey Cup against the Bombers. So, what do you remember most about the playoff run that year?
Well, like I said, we got on that roll
at
that time. And we knew, like, I mean, you had to go to Saskatchewan. It was going to be a tough game with Ken Austin. You know, Flutie's going to be very tough because, you know, it's interesting too. I mean, me and Flute, we're very competitive, right? And so, You know, it's interesting that, you know, you don't become friends with these guys until later.
I bet.
Because before that, I mean, then it was the same thing with Ken Austin. I mean, we weren't friends at all, really, until he started coaching in Toronto and being my coach. And I really started to spend time with him and appreciating who he was as a coach, as a player, his competitiveness. And Flutie is the same way, because I just seen Flutie in Vegas, and now, you know, he says things that, you know, he probably wouldn't have said before, but he's, what he says now. So it's always interesting now, our friendship, and I have a great amount of respect for him because his skill set, you know, the things he can do on the football field. And, you know, I always thought I was really good at buying time. Zone read. That he wasn't really good at it until he actually saw me do it. And I think, and so it's an appreciation for those games. So, and you know, when you play against Fluke, you got to bring your A game. You got to be ready to play because his ability to, you know, impact the game for four quarters.
For sure. So after 1994, you went to the, CFL expansion of the States, and you joined the Memphis Mad Dogs. What was the experience like playing the CFL in the United States? Just like that.
Yeah. Let's try this again. That's what it was like playing in the States. Very quiet. Okay. We'll just get Damon back on here in a second. Cause it just, I know he was running it off of his phone, and so maybe that was just not right. It's kind of jumpy on the connection, so we'll give it a second here.
The joys of technology.
Let's see here now if we get him back. There we go. Now we're back. Okay.
Well, you're trying to sell a Canadian game to the American audience and the American field, which is, what, 53 and a quarter, compared to sell that style of game and play to American audience. But the one thing I did realize, it was the ownership was really good. And during that time, we always played better when we played in the Canadian cities compared to the American cities because of the field size. And I remember the first game of the year we played the BC Lions, and there was a threat that they weren't going to play after they came out in pregame and warm up and realized that we're playing on grass and turf.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And so they had threatened not to play. And so that's really the only issue that the U.S. market and the U.S. teams had was the field size and the scheduling. You know, I think we played a game one time, and it was, I think it was, I don't know, Alabama played Memphis State or something like that. practically nobody came to our game. And there were games that people did attend, and it was exciting. We had a very talented team, but I knew when we played against the Canadian teams, I mean, they knew how to play the game and took advantage of certain parts of the game. But I mean, the experience was amazing, man. They gave me the key to the city of Memphis. You know, we were making American dollars. So, I mean, there's some things that are really good, and there's other things that, wish I would have, you know, had the opportunity to establish and stay a little bit longer because, you know, we were selling the game faster, more scoring and all those things, but the field didn't allow us to actually accomplish those things.
Oh, I guess. Yeah. It's with the smaller field for sure. Yeah. But now, was one of the good things the uniform, or was that one of the bad things? Or
of course, you know, the Memphis Mad Dog uniform was sweet because, you know, I get people today ask me, what'd you do with that Memphis jersey?
Outstanding. as you should.
I have all my jerseys. So, and all my jerseys are marked with their stats to add up to 72,000 some yards in each jersey. And so, yeah, it's, I mean, it was a unique experience, but at the same time, you know, very proud of, you know, what we're able to accomplish and what I was able to accomplish my 23 years. And, and really looking forward to the 75 years that's coming up for the Edmonton and the Elks history. So it's going to be fun as well.
Now, tell me a little bit about that, because September 4th, 2006, you set the all-time professional football passing record, passing Warren Moon, like you just said, you had followed through the Rose Bowl. What did that moment mean to you?
You know, it's interesting before that, because so often when somebody break a record, they break, the record. But what you guys don't, if you do remember, the original record was the Lancaster's record, 22 years, right. 50,000 yes. yards. And so I had the opportunity to be involved in both of those records. I remember when we won the Grey Cup in 87, me and Matt was on the middle of the field, and we were talking about, the fact that we knew we had to do it together to be able to win a championship. But I remember sitting on the middle of the field, we're looking at the record books at that time. I'm going in my first or second year. And, man, we're looking at the record books. Ronnie Lancaster, I couldn't believe the guy played 19 years and he had 50,000 yards passing. But, and when you look back hindsight, you realize, I didn't know I was going to play that long. Let alone, I figure if I can get 10 years in this league, I mean, that would be a great career. But to play 23 and then to be able to be involved in the breaking of Ronnie Lancaster 50,000 yards, which held for 22 years, when I took mine to 72,000 yards, I didn't hold mine for three years.
Yes, that's right.
Right. So it just tells you the evolution of the passing game and what the CFL has been doing over the years since Ronnie Lancaster has been throwing the football is like the first and foremost. So, when you imagine that, like Ronnie Lancaster held his record for 22 seasons.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And everyone thought when I put it to 72,000 yards, that's going to be forever. But no, then, Anthony Cavillo came out of throwing the football, and he's over there with Coach Matthews, and Coach Matthews always said to me, he's like, man, if I would have coached you, you would have 100,000 yards passing because I would never take you out, and that's exactly what he did. Anthony Cavill never, they didn't take him out when they were winning in the fourth quarter, and I remember I was in Edmonton. I was by the fourth quarter. If the game's out of reach, I'm out of the fourth quarter by that time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
There were several games where you were way ahead.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Damon, we know that we always relate the number 9 to you. You've got it on in the jersey behind you. So why the number 9? Did that have meaning to you?
It started with my brother. My brother, Marcus, wore number 9 in high school. And then I seen, who did I wear number 9 with? I seen Jim McMahon at BYU.
Mm, okay.
I seen him with the number 9 too. And I think that's when I wanted number 1, but Warren Moon was number 1. So, you had to shuffle. And I think a Warren Moon jersey might've been retired. So number 9 was the next best thing because it not only represents, my family a little bit because my big brother wore number 9, but Jim McMahon wore number 9. I thought it looked good. And I think 9 is a spiritual number as well. So
right.
It all worked.
Yeah. Dwayne Mandruziak told us before people would ask for 1 a lot and he'd always say, are you Warren Moon? And if they said no, it's like, then you can't have number 1. It seems fair.
Well, I know how to get to number 1 and say once at some point.
Yeah.
No matter what number I'm wearing, I know how to get to number 1.
That's true.
That's true. That is true. Now, Mike, do we have some fan questions in there to bring
absolutely.
David before we wrap this up? Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go here. Tim Capper's got one in the chat. Records are meant to be broken, but you were at the career passing yards head of the table for a while. What was it like seeing Calvillo finish his story and surpass the record?
Yeah, I think because I had the mindset of, records are meant to be broken. you know, he's with a system in place. He's with the same receiving core, and I don't know how many years he played with the same guys, 7 or 8 yeah. years, and he was putting up numbers as well. And so, you know, there's a chance for someone to come along and break it and put up the numbers. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, Anthony and myself are like, you know, we're two different style of quarterbacks. And so
yeah, absolutely,
I can appreciate him doing it because he's, you know, really probably will be considered a true passer and not right. much of a two-way quarterback. But, yeah, it's amazing, like saying, like for the point, because he's been throwing ever since he's been in the league, right? And like I said, I remember him in Las Vegas Posse. He was throwing a lot of gold balls back then, and I didn't really get the opportunity to start throwing the ball more until probably my second half of my career, the last 13 years. My first 10 years, I was pretty much only getting probably like 20 tosses a game. So it's hard to keep up, like I said earlier, about with somebody who's getting 40 attempts or 50 attempts at times.
Well, you know, one thing that Anthony Calvillo can't say, he's not even in the top 10 in rushing. But right. I believe you're I don't think he's in the top 50. Yeah. So, yeah. So I think you have the balanced attack. That is for sure. What are the ones
so when it comes to like all purpose yardage, like between right. us, like I win the battle in that.
That's
so.
Right.
No all question. Purpose, you know, I'm all purpose number one when passing and rushing. So yes.
Perfect.
Yeah. Anthony won't even be close. Kim was saying Damon will be doing some 2024 CFL draft analysis on his Instagram.
Ooh.
Yes. I did two IG lives, and I really wanted to talk about the draft that's coming up. And I think people don't realize like how important that draft is to all the teams in the CFL, knowing that you can only draft Canadians, and the Americans are put on a neg list. And so your team over the years early in my career was built on, it was always told that, hey, when you, the teams that have the really good Canadians are the teams that, you know, you have a chance to win not only games, but win championships. And so it's crucial when teams get the opportunity to draft Canadians. So, yeah, we all want to find unpolished diamonds. And so, yeah, when it came to that, I mean, I did two lives, one to talk about the upcoming draft and how important the teams have to put in the work to pick the right Canadian as base and can help their team win and help their team grow and hopefully, like saying, be a name that grows within the organization that people will know for years to come. So, I wanted to get into that a little bit more. So it was pretty cool.
That's going to be exciting to watch for sure.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's awesome. Kevin's asking, besides the Grey Cup, what would be your one most memorable game?
Ooh. Well, there's a lot of games.
Yeah.
Because I can talk about the one game that we lost in 86, the Grey Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And then the following year in 87, the home opener, we played the Grey Cup rematch.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think Matt was hurt, so I had the first start against Hamilton. And I threw 5 touchdowns that day, and I rushed for 100 yards.
Awesome.
And that was in 87. The other game was we were playing for second place in 93. I believe it was in 93, and we played the BC Lions for second place.
I just finished watching that game last night. It's
and
so
I think
good.
And I think that's the game I threw 3 touchdowns, ran 2, and I rushed for 170 and threw for 350 yards or something like that.
54-14
game. When you have games like that, when you can put up big numbers and then you still rush for 100, then those are games you're proud of, and you know those are games you don't see very often in CFL.
For sure.
You're running that game in the fourth quarter, the 33-yard scamper for the touchdown was unbelievable. Like, if it's just, you don't see many quarterbacks do that anymore, and just dodging guys left, right, and center and flying into the end zone. Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah.
No, that was one of those games that, like, it didn't matter what you did on the field. Like, you know, I was very elusive that day. And like you said, the Sally Ram was working. And so
yeah,
that's something that they should have been focused more on me than our run game. But our run game, because it really helped, because, you know, you had to almost kind of like pick, you know, your poison, because, like, you know, we had got Lucius, right? And so we're mm-hmm. running the football really good when yeah. Lucius came around, because he had a great feel for the zone read and the cutback, and he was a good receiver out of the backfield. And so we implemented not only the zone read, but the shovel with it and a lot of different things. And so it really opened up our run game, play action and naked boots. And then, like you said, we play action down the field, and we had downtown Eddie Brown go deep. And I throw it as far as I possibly can, you know, 70-yard bombs or 65-yard bombs, and he run under them. And, you know, and so there were fun times. We were a big play team, really.
One other thing we didn't talk about for the 93 team is that you were playing with the now commissioner, Randy Ambrosi. I mean, I know he missed part of the season because of his knee injury, but do you ever get a chance to bring that up when you see him now?
Of course, man. You know, I remind him of that ring he's holding. No. I think he always... I'm not sure. Was that his first or second? Did he?
It was his final season.
Was he traded final before season. They won the ring or something like that? Or
no, it? No. He was there for to the end. He does have the ring. He was there for the end. But I think he was.
No, injured I know at the he, had, he the was season, there for the but, ring. But was he there because he came from Toronto?
Yeah, I think he came before the season started, though, because I'm sure he was playing early on, because I was when I was watching some of those early games, they have some of he got interviewed on the sideline. I have a beautiful picture for the next time that he's on the podcast to ask him all about the bandana those and things, the glasses.
Those things are neat. I mean, those are the things you can use for perks, like when you get into something that
that's right. see Randy, like,
hey, you got to bring my quarterback in here, man. You won a great cup one together.
That's right.
So Randy's
with always real. That's all real big. And so whatever the commissioner's doing, I mean, I get in, like, no problem.
Yeah, Randy was here from 89 to 93, so it was a good 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So he got to the Grey Cup, but that was his only.
So that's the benefit of playing with the commissioner, and now it's commissioner, that, you know, you get a lot more perks now. You know, whatever event that he's doing, that, you know, I'm always invited.
I'm surprised. I mean, you're CFL legend. I mean, anyway, that okay. What other questions do we have there,
Super? A question I had is, I mean, you talked about passing Ron Lancaster's record. He was your coach in 93-94. What was that like?
That was amazing, because I don't think you could have wrote that story, because we ended up playing him the same day. The same day the record was, because I think I needed, I think at one point I needed, what, 5 yards.
Right.
And then everybody's on the sidelines, Alfred Jackson, all, you know, they're all betting to see who's going to have that catch of 5 yards. But I ended up, that 5 yards ended up being a 45-yard bomb, a touchdown in the end zone, which is, people would say, is very synonymous on how I played the game, right? And to do it in that way, it was quite special. And, you know, Jackson ended up getting that record in BC. But it was off of a broken by time play, break outside the pocket, and I throw a deep bomb. And I only needed 5 yards, really. So, but it's what makes it special, too, is it's the words what Ronnie said to me. Which is, you know, special. And then, you know, yeah, you just never forget those things, because, you know, he was my coach. He was amazing. Amazing coach. I learned a lot from Ronnie when it comes to time management and all those things. And so that's the unique thing is, you know, I've been around and surrounded by amazing coaches that helped me along the way, that that instilled in me a part of their game that they wanted to share. And I'm like, I'm like a computer, and I'm like someone who I like to add tools to my toolbox. And so my toolbox was growing as I was going in years in the CFL. I mean, I started off with a lunch pail, but but as I was gathering information and gathering more tools, I mean, then shoot, I needed a truck to handle my toolbox.
That's amazing. Why don't we get one more fan question there, super fan, and then we'll
I'll just set this here. Another one from Kim. Stay tuned for his new D9 virtual merchandise site launching soon and personalized video opportunities, which sounds very exciting.
It's my manager. She's reminding me of all the things I need to talk about. So, yes, FanArc. There's it's a unique app. It's called FanArc, and they also have the ability to sell merch. My merchandise and my logo. And so I'm coming out with hats, shirts, hoodies. It's a lot of different things they can do. It's a virtual merchandise site launching, personal video opportunities. And so it's really unique. I didn't find out about it until, you know, I came to the States, but really excited about the opportunity that's presented, and it'll be out soon.
Oh, can't wait. Oh, I'm excited for that. I'm gonna get get some D9 stuff. Come on now. That'd be perfect. Exactly. Yeah, love it. Okay. One more question there, Superfan, and then we'll go to the Damon go after that.
Sure. Chris Agar's got a question here. You played for a team or two in your pro career. Is there one team you wanted to play for that you didn't?
The one team, I don't know if there's a team that, you know, I thought when I first came to Edmonton, I was going to play for Edmonton my whole career.
You should have. Anyway. That's what should have happened. I'm sure you agree, Superfan.
Oh, no question.
Yeah. Should have been Edmonton forever. Like, look at how good he looked in the green and gold. It was perfect. Set all those passing records just being solely in green and gold. That would have been awesome, right? Mike? Oh, yeah. I was asking you because we're waiting for the feed to come back. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that kind of goes without saying that all of us would have preferred that for sure. But
oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
We were blessed with two amazing stints over a 6-year period
and two Grey Cups. Yeah.
And I just want to say, you know, it takes you need to play for Edmonton 6 years to get on that wall of honor. So we're all kind of waiting for maybe a number 9 up there on that wall one day.
That should be very soon. Yes, exactly.
I sure hope so.
I can't see why it wouldn't be.
I mean,
I think that's the one thing I really want probably most. Is to be on the wall of honor of the franchise that I started with. And they molded me and prepared me and those things. And so, yeah, no question. That would be probably, the best honor is to make it on that wall. And because I'm on the wall with BC Lions, and I'm on the wall with Toronto. And I spent less years in Toronto than I did with.
And you won two Grey Cups here. So I'm just saying.
Right.
Well, I will also say that I know in 2004 you won the cup with Toronto, which I was happy for you, but I was also grumpy because my cousin played for BC and you robbed me of my Grey Cup party. I mean, I don't know what to do after that, but that was an amazing game. We know that some of the guys from the team that listen to this. I mean, put Damon on the wall. Let's go. This is the year, 75th anniversary. Put one of the greatest to play the game up on the wall.
That number 9 needs to be on the wall.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right by Warren Moon, it'd be perfect.
That's where it should go. That'd be perfect. Because you are now part of a group that's looking to own the Elks. how did that come about for you, and how do you see the long-term success of the team?
Well, it's in a unique situation, and like I said, I understand the mindset of Edmonton. It's a very proud organization. When I was there, it was one of the best organizations in football, in the Canadian Football League. Man,
it's just, it's for some reason, it just wants to not, it wants to argue with your phone.
We probably need to do a better job on FaceTime, really.
We're going to do it that way next time. Okay, Damon, we are going to let you go because I don't want to be making it so hard as it keeps coming in and out for some reason, this silly thing. We'll sort this out. We'll definitely have you back on. Damon, thank you so much for all of your time and telling us of your stories. We have way more stories we could bring you up that we will bring you back for to talk more about your illustrious career. But tell everyone, I'm assuming you'll be up here for the 75th anniversary stuff.
Yes, I do plan on coming on the 75th anniversary, and I think that's June 5th through the 8th or something like that. I'll be there. And so yeah, I'm looking forward to that, and you know, also looking forward to the future of that organization too. And so it's exciting times right now, and so it's a rich history. Amazing football players that came through that organization. It's a proud organization. And so, and the fans are very knowledgeable. And so those are the things when I talk about the foundation of how much I've learned during the time I was in Edmonton and being a young quarterback and a young player really prepared me.
I'm so excited we're going to see you up here. That's exciting. We will make sure to come over and say hello for sure. Where do people follow you so that they can get all the information on your draft stuff and the D9 line and all those things?
Yeah, they can follow me on, I think on my thing, it's at Damon Allen 9.
Yep.
You can catch me on Instagram, even on Twitter. It's the same handle. I'm on Facebook and all this stuff, but you know, Instagram.
That's Instagram awesome. And Twitter is the main, and that's the part where I got a hold of you. So thank you so much for answering, and thank you so much for coming on and being part of the show, and for all the memories. We really, really appreciate
it. Hey, it's a part two, man. Let everyone know it's going to be a part two. We're going to do it the right way and
back. Absolutely. And forth, but... We will do a part two for sure. I have plans already in mind. I will set up a time, and we will make sure that we get Damon Allen back on the show to talk more about everything that is going on with you. Thank you again, Damon. Have a wonderful night. We will talk to you very soon, and we'll talk to you when you're here in June.
All right, no problem.
Okay, thanks, man.
Cheers. You got some B-roll for a fact.
That's right. Oh yeah. Which is perfect. I like that.
You got little stiplets you can pass out and set it again, right?
Yeah, so, absolutely. We will make it. Up, yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll get some footage. Don't you worry. It's going to be amazing. I know how to make this work. So just cut again. I'm thinking he's like okay. Thank you, Kim, for a great job for the conversation. And Damon was awesome. And I'm so glad that it hung in there for a good chunk of time that we did get some of those great stories. Because, I know, right? Like, both you and I are just like...
Yeah, I mean, we could have a 6-hour podcast where he just does the talking, and that would be our biggest seller for sure.
Absolutely. I love his stories. I know we didn't get to all of the questions.
No.
Sorry, gang. That's just kind of how that went. Let's grab a couple of fan questions before we switch over to overtime. And do we have a couple of questions in there that we need to answer, Mike, that we can get to before we switch over?
Let's just see here what we got. From Leanne.
Ooh, Leanne, any new tailgate menu items this year? Super fan, you are in charge of the menu.
Yeah, so I think we finalized the menu, which is good because tailgate's not very far from now. I think there are three new items on the list, three new weeks. So this should be interesting. We've got, of course, a lot of favorites. There's certain things that we could never take off or we'd be lynched. So we're definitely going to be having tacos in a bag. That's not a surprise. We'll probably be having some pierogies for the home opener.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's, like I said, three new items we've never done before. So I'm very excited to see what this looks like. Well, so
why don't we give one away this time? And then as we kind of get closer, because we're not far from being able to put out the menu, which is going to be exciting.
We are not very far.
So let's tease everybody with one new one.
Okay. Well, one thing, every time I tell people what this is, they kind of give me a funny look.
I know which one it is.
because everyone's like, I don't even know how that would happen. And that is a barbecue spaghetti. So this is a Memphis legendary menu item. So it's your regular spaghetti with tomato sauce, but it's half tomato sauce, half barbecue sauce with pulled pork. And it's a Memphis style pulled pork, which is a little sweet and savory. Absolutely delicious. We did some of the Memphis style barbecue sauce last year on our chicken on a skewer. Really popular item. And as soon as I saw that, I'm like, oh, I got to try this. And I've made it at home a few times now. And it is delicious.
That is, was that straight recommended from Dylan Mitchell, or was that?
I did mention it to him. So it was something he said. Now he's going to have to tell you if he can get some delivered to him. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, perfect. Oh, Lori, we're looking forward to another tailgate season and seeing you once again as well. Yes.
We got to find each other now because it's all going to be different spots.
Yeah, we're going to be all the, she's going to tell us where she is so that we can track down and make sure that we visit. Kobe, you had me at barbecue. Well, that's pretty much it. Yeah, that's that's pretty much how it goes. What is Capper saying?
Boots in a bag.
Yeah. I don't know if that works quite the same.
I don't know if that's what we're going to be doing, but, we'll be doing something.
Yeah, there's two other new ones. The surprises are coming.
Yeah.
Be prepared. Yeah. All right, let's wrap up the main show for now, because I have a feeling that I have a lot of editing to do over the next short while. It's going to sound great when it comes out as a podcast. I can tell you that right now.
There we go.
Thank you again to Damon Allen for joining us. You can follow him at Damon Allen 9 on Twitter, and make sure you're following for on Instagram as well, which I believe is D9 Mun Allen. I believe that's how it goes on Instagram.
Right.
So follow him there. Of course, follow our good friends at Pay It Forward with Football. They have their fundraising event coming up on May the 4th, bowling event. So get in touch with them and get your tickets to be part of that fun day on a Saturday. And of course, you can join us and you can join the huddle as we chat at the Turf District on all of your different social channels, except for on Blue Sky, which is Turf District Pod, because it's fun to be different. Super fan, where does everybody find you?
You can find me at 56 Parkies, and then you can find fun things like what's behind me here and some more on the history of the team at the Edmonton Football History account at EDMHISTOREE.
Wonderful. And you can find, of course, our good friend Commissioner Kayla at Duchess Lombardi once the season, or at least the training camp, opens. And you can find me at Free Policious. So if you are on, actually, before I go, we should mention the store, because you're going to want to keep your eye on the store in the next short while, because we are going to be adding some new things here before too terribly long as we get prepared for the coming season. So check it out. Zazzle.ca/store/turf_district_shop. First try. I just had to slow down and it worked really well. So that was amazing. Make sure that you check that out and join in with some of your Turf District gear, especially as we get closer to the season. If you're on YouTube Live, stick around. We are going to overtime right away, and we'll open up some more fan discussion on things that are going on with the team. Otherwise, we will be back in 2 weeks with a new guest as we move 2 weeks closer to training camp. Oh, I know we're both going to be there. It's going to be so amazing. So we will see you in a couple weeks to talk more about that. Otherwise, for Commissioner Kayla and Superfan Mike, I'm Andrew. Remember, you can't catch footballs with your face, and we will absolutely talk to you in 2 weeks.